Welcome to the Food and Faith Podcast, conversations from the soil and around the table with your co-hosts Anna Wolfenden and Sam Chamlin.
So something really cool happened today. Sam and I were not on Zoom or the phone in different states, but actually in the same room. And not only that, we were surrounded by an incredible group of people who came together at the Headwaters Conference to talk about the intersection of food and faith and agrarian and rural ministry. And so we have a handful of those people here in a room, and we're going to talk a bit about the day and our reflections and share about some of the conversations that have been happening.
Yeah, and for Keep and Till, Headwaters was always about bringing people together, talking about ideas. And so we were so blessed to have such a remarkable cast of speakers and participants to contribute to that conversation. So from K&T, we're just super excited and grateful for the folks who have participated in this. And for those of you who are in the room, thank you for being a part and for contributing your own voices, not only today, but even in this session as we just kind of decompress and try to draw some connections between what happened today.
So if you want to just go around and introduce yourself, who you are and where you meet in the intersection of food and faith.
Sure. My name is Daryl Harris. I pastor a church called Newborn Community of Faith Church in Baltimore, Maryland. My entry point into this kind of food and faith movement was 2013. I took a job at Johns Hopkins Center for Livable Future. I was the manager of a project called the Baltimore Food and Faith Project, and that project was working with local congregations to try to think with them, work with them about improving the way that they ate, the way that they grew, the way that they purchased, and the way that they just utilized food in general, and try to encourage them to do it in the more faithful fashion. And then Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, myself, and Aaliyah Fraser started an organization called the Black Church Food Security Network. And then the church that I now pastor, I've been pastoring now almost 3 weeks. Almost 3 weeks I've been pastoring. So very early on.
Congratulations.
Yeah, but I've been working with the church for years. And so, but that church that I now pastor owns a farm called Shrimp to Love 2 Farm. It's in Sandtown, Winchester, Baltimore City. It's the area that was made famous by Freddie Gray. So that's the neighborhood where he lived. So we have a 1.5 acre farm, and we're growing and working with food every day there. And so through that, I'm involved.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
So my name is Jen Blesch, and my entry point into the food and faith conversation happened in two different segments of my life. So first, I started out in the local foods movement in Madison, Wisconsin. I was at the University of Wisconsin-Madison for my undergraduate, and I was really involved in a local food student organization called Slow Food UW. And we were advocates for local farmers and for conscious eating, and we offered meals to students at a reasonable price using the local foods from our community. Later on in my life, I got more involved in ministry, decided to go to seminary at Boston University School of Theology, become a member in discernment in the United Church of Christ, which is still where I'm at today. And while I was in seminary, I had the privilege of writing a master's thesis on farm and dinner churches. And mostly for interests that are for my own vocational journey, I'm hoping to be one day what I like to call a farmer pastor. That's the identity I'm taking on. So I wanted to learn about other people who are doing it. And that's why this conference was really exciting to me, was to really meet other people who are at this intersection of faith. It's not a widespread conversation in seminaries necessarily. So it's just really overwhelming and thrilling to be around people who are really at this intersection.
My name is Erica Jeffy, and I'm the Senior Director of the Faith Outreach Department at the Humane Society of the United States. We work across all faiths to engage faith leaders on the premise that all religious traditions call on us as individuals to have compassion and treat animals humanely and kindly, from a calling through our shared values. So my role in the food and faith field is that we work a lot with humane, sustainable farmers to educate consumers and encourage a higher standard of care for animal agriculture in the face of what is an ever-growing threat from large factory farm interests that are quite prevalent in our country today. So today was a very inspiring day to see people out in their communities impacting real change at the intersection of food and faith, and I'm excited to be part of this conversation today.
I'm Rachel Van Boven. I'm a first-year student at Earlham School of Religion, a seminary, a Quaker seminary. I'm at the very beginning of my journey with food and faith and ministry, and so was here today as a definite lots of questions, lots of interests, and at the very start. I do come from a long line of farmer / theologians, so I'm getting back into that line finally and curious to see how it unfolds.
I love just the different voices that are right here in this room and the neat cross-section of the people we've heard from today. So I thought we'd start off by just asking, what is sticking with you from the day? Maybe it was an inspiring moment, or maybe it was a moment that kind of got stuck in your craw. Like, what are you still chewing on?
So I can share something. At the very beginning, the first speaker met, he spoke today, and he talked about how he grew up on a farm, his parents were farmers, and his parents hired migrant workers, African-American migrant workers from the South, to grow up to come and farm. And he explained that through that, they paid the workers very little, but that through their labor, his family was able to pay for his college education, or their college education. And essentially he painted it like his family had a decent middle class lifestyle, but it was very much because of the cheap labor that they were able to get from these African-American farmers. And that resonated with me for 1,001 issues, 1,001 reasons rather, but primarily because I remembering my mom, and so she started working on farms from age 6, and she was pulling tobacco and working with the rest of her family. She was one of the younger siblings of 10. And so she started from age 6 and moved and continued working in tobacco until she got, I think around her high school years, she had other opportunities to do other things, so she took advantage of those. but, where we are in life, where his family is, where my family is, what his family has had to do and overcome, what my family has had to do and overcome, there's a legacy there, right? And it's like, we are, we're not all starting at the same page. We are not, the history hasn't been fair. The history hasn't been equitably distributed. But this is kind of what we've inherited. And so it becomes incumbent upon this generation of people, really, not just farmers, but just generation of people, generation of religious folk, what are we going to do with the place that we find ourselves and with the legacy that we stand upon.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think continuing on with what you were saying there, Daryl, I think one of the things that you said earlier, Anna, really has resonated with me. A lot of the work that I do is in the legislative and political field, and a lot of what Avery with Interfaith Power and Light also touched on was the importance of engaging in those spaces and being present, being a voter, contacting our legislators. But oftentimes that work can be heavy, it can be defeating, but it's so, so important. And one of the things that you said that I was kind of rabidly taking notes with every single speaker, so I have pages and pages of notes, but one of the things that you said is church has always been reinventing itself. How we're faithful in this generation, in this place, and in this time is really the question. We need to continue to figure out how that resonates in our communities. And that's something that with all of our speakers today, the thread was really chasing the beauty, I think, was seeing where we stood historically, picking up on those legacies, but really, I think, celebrating just being present in our communities, seeing what those needs are, being the eyes and ears of Christ in our community, and really championing what is present in all of that goodness and all of that beauty. And I think leaving here today was just truly inspiring to me, not only the work that all of our speakers are engaged in their communities, but the role that we play in bringing the church to wherever we are and wherever we're meeting those in our community where they are right now. So just inspiring and really truly filled with beauty. So I'm thankful for that.
Can I ask a quick question, excuse me? So given your background, right, like, so there was a comment made not long ago that kind of like all politicians are kind of bad people. Essentially, it was like it was a removing, right? Like, I don't want to engage in politics because they're all bad, and therefore there's no winner, so I'm kind of pulling back. And then, so, like, what do you say to religious people who have that type of stance?
I think that's a tough question always, because I think a lot of what we see is just what's a lot often represented in the media. I think there are really good people who come into public office with those good intentions and they get caught up in the system. I think what's very, very important is that we as their constituents continue to contact them and continue to be engaged in the process, which means from the start voting, but continuing to hold them accountable in office. I think, like I said, there are good people in office, but I think a lot of times they become so disconnected from the reality back in their communities. And I think that comes back on us. The good work that's happening in their communities, they're not often invited to come out on a Saturday and see what's happening. See what's happening at your church, see what's happening on the farm, and really getting engrossed in what's happening back in their communities to be accountable for that. So I know it can be very upsetting and disappointing when you see just sort of the hot headlines in the news, because that's what catches people's eyes. But I think it is important as people of faith that our values are voiced to our members of Congress and to our city council, county commission, our mayors, our state legislators, because if we just look at it and say they're all corrupt, the system's corrupt, and we stand on the sidelines, then we're in an era and a time and place where just inaction is a voice and a vote in and of itself. So you're contributing to the problem if you're sitting on the sidelines. And as a person of faith, your voice is very crucial, especially to members who hold their faith very near and dear to their hearts, to be hearing from their constituents about why their faith should be impacting how they're voting and how they're representing you in their public office. So I've got to stay involved. It's very important.
That picks up on one of the things I heard you say in your talk, Ariel, and I heard Sam say this as well, is when we chase these, I shouldn't say chase, when we get into these stories and into these communities, and we see the inequality that we heard in Matt's story, when we see what's happening in the, what's the access to food? It's not just about food. Oh, it's about economics. It's about race. It's about all these pieces that the interconnection seems to be something that we are all pointing to, like the interconnection and the equality and inequality in that interconnection. So that while I appreciate like the drawing out of the beauty of the interconnection, I think it's also important to look at the ways that there are power dynamics and there are accessibility dynamics within our interconnection. And I think I see that too with the way that we engage with people in public office and we engage with our civic duty, that those are all these threads of the interconnected web, and that the more we are willing to explore and see and to take responsibility for the ways that we are privileged by it and how we are taking and what we are giving and how that affects others. I feel like if there's one thing that I want to take from today, it would be that like the choices we all make affect everybody. And that we are in relation with everybody else, and how do we, be responsible, and what does it mean to be Christ-like in that?
And just to echo that, that was one of the things that stuck with me from the conference was, Daryl, what you were saying about famine and how you had been asked to provide a theological basis for, or a biblical basis for the food and faith intersection, and that you had started with, you can't look at verses that are, or stories that are about famine, because access to food and lack of access to food isn't about famine. This isn't like a natural disaster. There is food. There's an abundance of food here, so the lack of access to it is about something different. And I just loved how simply that gets at the heart of, like, there's all these other issues. It's just such a clear way to get to that. There's all these other issues. This isn't famine. This is injustice and inequality. And for me, being in seminary right now, I'm always having to think about, like, theologically how I can tie these back. So that was, like, very helpful.
Oh, well, thank you. I want to say thank you for listening. I worked hard on that. Thank you for that. But yeah, I think, you know, it's the issue really is we don't love our neighbors well enough, right? I mean, that's the real issue. But that is so broad and it's so big, and so we can pull a chunk out of it and say, okay, let's just think about food for a while, and see how the way, you know, all the issues that have been divulged around our food system is really a symptom, right? It's a symptom of the fact that we don't love, and so we kind of, there's aspects of creation, and I like that you went to the creation narrative. Of course, you went to Genesis 3, but I was thinking about Genesis 1 and how in Genesis 1, everything's created and everything is good, in the sense that, like, everything is equally good, and then everything together is very good, right? And very good doesn't come until all things are in place. But the way that we either have been taught or the way that it has come to be is that some of us see ourselves as a little more good than others. Mm-hmm. And what that turns into is inequality, and it turns into injustices, and neighborhoods that don't have food, neighborhoods that every year this neighborhood is where all the crime is every single year. And it's predictable, and it's been happening since the neighborhood's existence. But we kind of throw our hands up and act like we don't, you know, like this. Oh, this is too big a problem for me to solve. But it's not really.
I think what we're talking about now, and this is Jen speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, identifying. Yeah. So.
This is reminding me of something that Sam was talking about in his presentation that really inspired me. He was talking about how the occurrence of food and us looking at food is really an anthropological endeavor, right? This isn't, you know, we're trying to connect to creation, yes, but ultimately at the base of it, it's another way of asking, who are we? And you use I wrote down your quote, Sam, we are spirit-infused soil. And we could probably spend an hour just unpacking what that means. Right. I just think it's a really, really beautiful concept. And this idea of, like, who are we, you know, is involved in these issues of justice that we're talking about and the way that food is distributed. I think it's a question that we're perennially coming back to. I mean, the prophets in the Old Testament were literally talking about the same thing. Like, people are not being fed. They're hungry in the streets, and this is a moral problem. So these questions just keep coming back over and over again. And what amazes me is just the ways in which food sits at the center of it all so often. We need the food to live. And so our most basic justice issues are related to food because people don't have enough of it. And how we relate to each other has a lot to say about who we believe we are. And that question of who we believe we are just relates to all these other things, like, you know, how do we relate to this earth, and who are we in, you know, before God? So I think it's just really amazing the way that food is an avenue to start asking these questions. And when we do, right, we don't think about, most of us don't think about food because it's most of us don't think about food because it's available at the grocery store, if we're fortunate enough to live close to a grocery store. But when we really start thinking about food and asking these questions, we find that food offers a touch point to all these other aspects of our web of relationships, whether it's to God or to the earth or to other people or to our governmental institutions. Kind of like you were saying before, Anna, the network of connections that food leads us to.
I'm reminded of a seminary professor once who, we were talking about that passage around the crucifixion where there's this seamless garment, and that idea of a seamless garment kept coming back to me, that we want, as we think about our faith, so often we want to take a chunk, as Daryl just said, like, I just want to deal with this issue. But what food and faith has revealed is that it really is this kind of a seamless garment around the cross of Christ, that as we proclaim this gospel, at least in the Christian tradition, we're not allowed to kind of pull on this one thread and just pretend as if we can have this tunnel vision that allows us to focus on this one thing. And certainly we have charisms and gifts, and people, you know, have insight, and, you know, we honor that. But inside of the community, to tug on the thread of food is really to tug on the thread of injustice, and to beg for the kingdom to come. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I took away from this. And Daryl, I was reminded of, you know, your discussions around Pentecost. And Pentecost as a terrestrial reality. And so we're still looking for that kingdom. And that kingdom's not going to come as long as there are some that are good and some that are more good. It's not going to come as long as there are some that are around the table and some that aren't around the table. And so the inspiration for me, even as I got to present, was just, wow, we're going to end up in a lot of conversations we didn't know we were going to end up in, but that is going to drive our faith to places we didn't know it was going to go. And so there's a great hope, I think, at the end of all this that emerges, even as we face, you know, some really big issues that we've talked about today.
Yeah. So this might sound like the same question, so, but I'm curious what people are taking forward. You know, I think. What are the things that maybe within your context? I mean, I love that image, Sam, of tugging on the thread. Mm-hmm. So as you start to tug, what do you see moving out there? What's starting to shimmer or just to wiggle or just to give it, like, wanting you to give attention to?
I find that my response is very much an emotional response rather than like, oh, there's this one idea I'm going to walk away with. I feel like I'm right now, my heart just feels really full. Mm-hmm. When people come together and are willing to talk about difficult issues, are willing to talk about their hopes and their dreams, and willing to tell their stories, kind of like you were saying before, Anna, that it, for me, it just fills me with a sense of hope and a sense of purpose and a real sense of beauty that people from all over the country are coming together to have these conversations and to really imagine, you know, how can we have a better world, a healthier world, a more spirit-filled world? And for me, that just leaves me, I'm going to walk away and get in my car with a sense of hope for the future.
Thank you, Jen.
Similarly, for me, I think it was just a couple of years ago that I started to think about these things and to see it being practiced and just hear all the different stories, it's like, oh, it's being done. And there are ways to do it, and there's so many different ways that it's being done. It's inspiring. And also to know that it's not, food and faith is not being done in the mainstream. It's not like a big movement in this country. So it feels a little bit like the ministry that I'll go into is something that we don't have a form. It's not a specific form. It's not like a specific job that I'm going to be able to get. But to know that there's this like community of people that I'm just beginning to connect with is like comforting. Mm-hmm. And because you can't do this, you need community to do something like this.
And we're so glad you drove to get here, because I think that's so true.
Yeah.
That we need, and I mean, it's like Sam, you spoke to this really powerfully, that we're not we are not alone in this work, and mm-hmm. we run into so much trouble when we even begin to think that we're alone. In mm-hmm. So that, because it's not true, yeah. But it's also we can't do it on our own.
Yeah.
There is a growing network of people who are having these conversations, mm-hmm. and we mm-hmm. need to support each other and raise each other up and yeah. educate each other.
Yeah, and that we're in such diverse contexts. I was talking with someone at the conference today, and we were just feeling amazed at how with these churches that are coming about, or these spiritual communities that are coming about, that there's really no formula. Mm-hmm. That no two churches are the same. There's no model that, you know, we all came together in one room to think about, and then we're sending everyone out the door with this model. We're all in different communities with different issues that we need to address. And we all have different resources at our fingertips. So it's just really, we were talking about diversity earlier today, and I think it's just amazing the diversity that we were bringing in, and to show the different ways that we can really give praise to God and to grow in justice in our communities, and to learn what it means to be faithful people. I think that's a beautiful thing.
I think it was Avery who said, talking about climate change, he said there's not one silver bullet. Mm-hmm. There's a silver seed bomb that has a diverse amount of solutions, right? I was like, I love
that.
He
said, buckshot.
Then he said seed bomb after.
Sorry. We're in Carroll County, all right? We're talking about buckshot out here.
Okay. Well, you know. I pulled the
but very... Thank you. Yeah, the seed bomb is better.
Yeah. They both work, though.
Yeah.
Yes, we need many. Yeah. That we're all here around uh-huh. this table. Yeah.
And I think it's really a testament too to relationships. I mean, I think about just for myself personally, I would not have known about this event just being about an hour down the road for me if it wasn't for seeing it being promoted by Sam, who was also part of the Regenerate Network at Wake Forest University Divinity School through Fred Bonson. So I think it's interesting today just to see the diversity of our speakers and our walks of life and where we're coming from, and the ability to leave here knowing that there are relationships that are just starting to blossom here, and keeping up with each other and spending time in each other's spaces and really going out to each other's farms, going out to seeing the spaces that we're all active in and learning from each other, and being able to have people who are true partners in this. Like you said, we're not alone in the various work that we're doing, but to really be able to have people we can lean on to have honest, open, true, real conversations with, because we're, I think, at a place and time in our society today where we can't even have a civil conversation with a lot of people, really, in a lot of ways. So really going back to the basics and back to the heart of the matter with relationships is what I think coming out of today is going to be so valuable for all the people that were in the room today to move forward and bring back home to our own ministries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine is something similar in that I want to start emphasizing the way that we see ourselves and the way that we see our neighbors, or even people that we may not consider our neighbor, right? Because people may not see Carroll County as neighboring to Baltimore. When I'm in Baltimore, I talk about neighbors. They're like, yeah, but that person lives way over on the other side. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? That's not my neighbor. So I mean that broadly, right? just how you think of yourself and how you think of other human beings,
yeah.
and how you think of the rest of creation. I think I may preach on that for a while. I may start with Amos. Sam talked about Amos. Was it 8 and 9? I think in
Amos
your presentation.
8 and 9, yeah.
Amos has a lot of great wisdom about justice and about equality, and I think it would just be great to sit with that and to study it and to, you know, kind of ruminate on it over and over and over again. And yeah, maybe I'll do it for like a year of justice.
A year out of Amos, wow, that's a real preaching time.
Well, not a year in Amos.
Gotcha. Yeah,
I may start with Amos and then we'll branch out. Branch out.
And I'm reminded of that too. Like, there are ways in which our communities are sort of the underside. I mean, being in a rural community, there are real issues out here that we have to address. But also there are ways in which we are not the underside. We are actually there's ways in which we are authority. The ways that we have power. Ways that we, you know. And so being aware of those spaces and saying, well, wait a second. Yeah, I mean, we have problems, but also learning to listen to our neighbors and to realize that sometimes we have privilege and we're allowed to put aside some of those things. And so that goes right along with neighbor. And that's what Amos was. I mean, Amos was out of the hills, a farmer from the middle of nowhere. You know, he's an underside preacher. So finding the underside, you know, finding the voice, you know, it's not about giving voice to the voiceless. It's about creating space for those with voices to share their own stories. And oftentimes to just not talk and to sit at their feet and to allow the stories that are there to come out and to inform the work that you're doing. So that's one of the ways Amos challenges me. I look forward to the sermon series.
Well, we're so grateful for all of you for taking time to reflect together. And for our podcast listeners, if your interest was piqued, Matt and Dariel and Sam and myself's presentations will be coming live after this one that you're listening to, and continue the conversation.
Indeed. So.
Thank you so much to Sam and to Keep Until for hosting this.
On behalf of Keep Until, I said at the beginning, I will say that I can't believe you actually came. Oh my gosh, people are actually interested in this and care enough about, you know, this community of faith out here that's just trying to be to be an outlet for this conversation in this part of the world. So just the fact that you've decided to be here in body and to support this just means the world to us and reminds us that we're not alone. So we're very grateful to have created this space and to count each of you as friends. So thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Faith Podcast. Our collaborators are Wake Forest University School of Divinity, Plainsong Farm, Garden Church, and the Keep Until. And the music is by Paul Diemer. Follow along and keep up to date with the podcast on Facebook at Food and Faith Podcast, Twitter and Instagram at Food and Faith Pod, or on our website at foodandfaithpodcast.org.